again, again.
Chewie. We're home.
I bypassed the compressor.
You were the chosen one!
Something truly special.
Congratulations. You are being rescued.
Revenge is not the Jedi way.
I am no Jedi.
The ability to speak might not make you intelligent, but we're going to try to prove otherwise. This is the Clashing Sabers podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brandon, and I am here with my wonderful co-hosts. First, we have the man best known for practicing Force Kung Fu on Alderaan. It's
Drew, I guess.
You know,
I'll take it.
Yeah. I thought I'd give you a cool intro this time.
I appreciate that. That gives me a lot more credit for physical activity than I think is appropriate, but I will take it.
You know,
how are you?
Take it when you can get it. I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm excited tonight. Our topic is going to be really, really interesting, and something that I am enjoying talking about any opportunity that I get. And we could not talk about what we're going to be talking about tonight without the third member of our ragtag bunch. He sees the Force as a droid building factory. It's
D'Vor.
Guys, tonight is going to be a ton of fun. We are delving into, of course, the thing that is on everybody's mind, which is the new upcoming live-action show, The Acolyte. We are going to use our Best in Butts format to talk about it and to kind of look at what could make this show really be a hit and what are some things that could possibly send it down a dark path and not in the way that we necessarily want that to be true. So it's going to be a really interesting discussion. Before we get into that, though, please make sure you are following us on all of our social networks so you can keep up with show releases and extra content, things like that. We are Clashing Sabers on everything, so make sure you're subscribed there. And if you have the time, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/clashingsabers, and put some books into classrooms across the country. I actually just was on an episode today of The Pod Awakens, which we talked about Test of Courage. So if you like Test of Courage, make sure you go check that out too. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's the housekeeping, guys. How the heck are we? How are we doing?
I think we're doing okay. Test of Courage is phase one High Republic, right?
It is phase one High Republic. And
okay.
I'm not sure if either of you have delved into Defy the Storm yet.
No, not yet.
No.
A little behind.
Okay. I will just say I am very glad that I reread Test of Courage before reading Defy the Storm. Because a middle grade novel being foundational for this new YA novel was not in my my bingo card, but I'm digging it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really good.
Good to know.
Drew, I know you're going, oh, God, do I have to read a middle grade novel? No, you don't have to read Test of Courage, in order to understand the story. But there are some definite connections and allusions to what happens there that is played out in Defy the Storm. And
that's okay. I feel pretty good being one of, like, four people on the planet who read Edge of Balance Precedent. So I know what Shri Karai Karai or whatever it is came from before, like, the rest of you nerds did. So I felt good about
that. That was so good.
Isn't that great? I was so excited about that book. That book was great.
So glad we're getting a fourth. Not that I doubted it, but it was nice to get the announcement.
It's weird that they're calling it the third volume, though.
They are?
Yeah. Like, there were two. There's volumes one and two, which were part of phase one. And then the Edge of Balance for phase two is just called Precedent. Like, it doesn't have a number or nothing like that.
Oh. So
the spinal printing, you know, of the book, it's going to go 1-2 Precedent 3, which is not helpful at all for the shelves looking consistent.
Silly.
It's consistent in Star Wars' mission of being inconsistent with their publishing displays and whatnot.
Yes.
It's just really crazy.
So, but Precedent isn't like a prequel or anything. It like falls in order like it should be the third installment?
It's kind of like the microcosm of High Republic itself, where it's like phase one, you start, then two, you kind of go back, and now you're in three, you kind of, you know, return to the present, quote unquote. It's a little bit like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It definitely does. It's got like a strong flashback. to it, which is the majority of the story, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But Devorah, I think, like, in like the story frame, like, it opens and closes with people in like, what would have been current time for phase
yes.
one. Yes. Okay. Okay. And this one, whatever, whenever the third one comes out, I'm sure will be like a year or two after, you know, the fall of Starlight Beacon.
Rest in peace.
Gone too soon. Forever in our memories, I guess.
Hearts. I mean, you almost got it forever inked on your body. I still don't know why you haven't done that.
Well, just because I haven't got it yet doesn't mean I won't.
That's a very good point. Are you going to are you gonna do Shining Starlight Beacon or Crash? You should have like one on each arm.
That's an interesting idea. That I think we'll go in peak condition first.
Okay.
And see how that goes.
Crashing Starlight Beacon feels like something Marcion would tattoo on himself.
He tattooed that on
his face. Have like a big one on his back, you know, like a giant.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I do have that. You know how like they had the poster at the Star Wars Celebration in Anaheim?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's available in other places where it's on fire and they have all the characters and kind of like their beat up, you know, their beat up action figure variant, as it were. That would make an excellent back piece. It would probably take several visits.
Yeah. And
that's not for me.
A few thousand dollars.
Several, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Devorah, do you have any tattoos?
I do not, no.
Okay, if you had to get a Star Wars tattoo, what are you getting?
When he gets a Star Wars tattoo.
Okay, I didn't want to put any pressure on him.
I know the answer to this question.
Go for it.
You're going to love the answer to this question. The Star Wars tattoo that I would want to get is the symbol that is on the back of General Grievous's cape, if you've ever seen it. It's like this kind of like Klingon-y type symbol. Like, it looks really cool. It's a Kalish symbol, but that's what I would do.
That is so on brand. It's actually physically painful for me.
I knew it was. I thought for sure it was going to be like some B1 battle droid related imagery.
I thought he was going to say Mr. Bones.
That's what I was going to suggest for him.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
God, no.
I don't know, man. A Mr. Bones tattoo might be the saddest. I don't know.
Drew, do you have any plans for new tattoos?
Plans, no. Hopes and desires, yes. You're right. The Starlight Beacon one is definitely up there. If I got to get the new omnibus of comics for Phase 3, which isn't out for another, I think, several months now. I don't think it's supposed to be released until June, because I need some more Avar Chris art to make sure that we get something that is nice. I had a collection going of every panel from comics she was in, and I was like, this is stupid. So I would like to get something of her character, so long as the ending of the story. That's kind of the issue I have, is like the ending of the story. I want to make sure it works out in the end in some way, shape, or form. I don't want to. You don't want to be the guy who got Jar Jar Binks tattooed before Phantom Menace even came out.
You mean Seth Rogen?
Exactly. Nice job picking that up. So I just kind of want to make sure that, because, you know, Starlight Beacon, I feel like everybody knew it wasn't exactly going to be hanging around terribly long. As much as we all loved it when it was introduced, it seemed a little fated for the seas, as it were. So that one is okay, but the individual characters is kind of gets a little bit dicey. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I was talking about this earlier today about how I love Vernestra, but I'm not sure if she's one of my top 10 Star Wars characters yet, because I don't have the full story.
It's gonna really depend on what happens in like the next couple weeks and months.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm honestly so excited for the end of High Republic, purely so that I can go back and reread everything again and really have a full grasp of the story, you know. And
interesting.
I want to read it in chronological order and really have everything all in one fair swoop, because like reading Defy the Storm, there's a lot of connections that I'm having to go back to remind myself of things that happened in other books that it's just been a while since I've read. And you can definitely read the book without having an understanding of those other books. You know, they've done a good job of that in High Republic. But I just like to know all the things. And so that's something that I'm really looking forward to. So I'm hoping not only that, you know, Acolyte lands, but that the ending of the High Republic novels lands really well, because I don't want to look forward to reading that and then, you know, get a How I Met Your Mother type ending where you go back and go, what the heck was all of this for anyways? And
okay.
Have you not watched the ending of How I Met Your Mother?
I've never watched that show.
Oh, well, if the listeners who have know exactly what I'm talking about. So
there you go.
What else have we been Star Wars-ing, guys? Anything outside of High Republic you guys have been into lately? Other than, of course, you know, freaking out over the Acolyte, and Devor and I have been watching Bad Batch and talking about that.
That's cool. I've been filling in some of my blind spots in the Legends continuum. I got a copy of The Black Fleet Crisis, which I don't know that I've ever read, nor do I know anybody who would admit to ever having read it before. So I'm excited to see what that one is about. But I also got the Tales from the Empire and Tales from the New Republic books, which I had never read. They're supposed to be kind of in line with the Tales from Jabba's Palace and the Mos Eisley Cantina, and the third one, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, I think.
Yeah.
That sounds right. Yeah. So they're kind of, these ones are short stories that were taken from some Star Wars magazine that published short stories in like the mid 90s. I don't think it was Star Wars Insider though, now that I say this out loud. So the writing is definitely 90s, which I don't think is bad, but it definitely is different from kind of stories that we get today. Like, I'm trying to like not compare that to the From a Certain Point of View books. Very, very hard, but that's really kind of the first thing that comes to mind, is like an anthology of stories from Legends versus an anthology of stories from current canon, and how are they alike and how are they different is kind of fun to do in my brain. But that's kind of what I've been working through those now.
I've read like 2/3 probably of Tales of the Bounty Hunter, and I don't know.
Was it the IG-88 story that jumped you off the train?
Which time? Because
that one, excuse me.
I've probably picked up and put down that book like 7 or 8 times.
I don't understand why there's so much Dengar content in the world. You know, he seems to keep coming up in comics and books and stories. And really, this clicked in when we were reading the Aftermath trilogy. Why do people go back to Dengar as like their cool guy bounty hunter from the classic movies? Like, there's so many better options. Let's stop picking him, please. He's not fun. He's just not fun.
Well, and there's nothing to cling to about him. He's just there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at least Boss has like a cool look. Like, Dengar is just... he's there and he's wearing a towel like over his face. Like,
he's heavily bandaged and you're like, this is who the Empire calls in their hour of need for dark and seedy work to get completed. Okay, if you say so. And then there's IG-88, who's just amazing.
Well, I think like in Tales of the Bounty Hunter in particular, but in some of the older Star Wars short story type books, They cling too much to like one aspect of a character and don't really develop them beyond that. And in the modern short stories, I'm not a huge short story person, so I kind of have a jaded view on both eras. But in the modern short stories, they are developing more well-rounded characters, you know?
And Yeah. I think that's kind of one of those hallmarks of the 90s writing, especially in the science fiction world like this, is that it's very aesthetic driven. So if something looks cool, they're going to tell you why and the backstory about that kind of thing. But they don't have, I don't think they have as much of like, here's how this person's character really influences their decisions and that kind of thing. You know, it's kind of that pre 9/11 ambivalence of like, what's the bowling movie? Holy cow. The Big Lebowski. It's kind of like, it's a lot of characters, it feels like, from that kind of era of storytelling, which isn't bad. It's just of its time. So it's kind of been interesting to go back and be like, this is not anything like reading Master and Apprentice or anything written after 2012, as a matter of fact. Yeah. There's really nothing quite like it. So, well, it's pretty good. I'm working through it, and then I'm keeping my eyes open for the next High Republic books as they come out. And that's, I think, the next major, although Defy the Storm, that one came out not terribly long ago, right?
Yeah, that, and then we have The Living Force coming out
in a couple
weeks. Yeah. Yeah,
I've got. Yep, that's a book.
It's pretty exciting, honestly. I'm really.
We're not allowed to talk about it.
No. We're
you
not.
Told me I'm not allowed to talk about it. Yep, that one's a book, which we will probably discuss.
And then, are we getting the Mace Windu book this year, or is that
next August?
Year? August. Okay.
August.
Crazy. It's happening quickly. It's all coming together. And then,
does that one have a title?
Yeah. That is the glass.
Stop. Get out.
It is, I think, The Glass Abyss. Is that it? It has a delightfully, like, 90s EU title.
Yeah, you're right. Look at that. The Glass Abyss. Look at that.
Okay.
Jedi Master Mace Windu travels to a dangerous remote planet on a mission that challenges every... So this really is like Shatterpoint 2.0, isn't it? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And he's continuing some mission from Qui-Gon, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's what
to
it
see.
Says.
I'm going to be really interested to see what they do, particularly with Mace Windu's motivations in that book, you know, mm-hmm. because the events of Phantom Menace are the first domino, and things are starting to shift. And we have this character who is kind of the epitome of the Jedi dogma, but before it really becomes the true hindrance that it does around the time of Attack of the Clones. So I'll be interested to see how they develop, like, what really is driving him to pick up after Qui-Gon, but also to step away from the Jedi Council for a minute to handle a mission. You know, it's not very often they go out and do that. So, I'm really looking forward to that book. Devor, how are you feeling about the Bad Batch lately?
Yeah, so, you know, we just got, at the time of this recording, we just got out of the Asajj Ventress episode and are, at this week release time, going to be going into another two-parter. I will admit that this last kind of little two-episode kind of mini plot around the whole M count of it all, it's felt a little plotting. Like, I'm waiting for a little bit of gas to get, you know, put back in this car and let us start going.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there may be a couple reasons for that. I think one of them is, you know, because, again, these past two episodes have all been about, like, the Batch, and they're trying to figure out why the Empire is going after Omega, and they're trying to figure out M counts. Like, one part of it is, I think, just, like, from, like, a story point of view, like, it's hard to do a plot line that's centered on a mystery, the answer of which the audience knows. So it's, like, it's easier when, you know, you as the viewer, you know, reader, listener, whatever medium you're talking about, is like that you're learning the mystery with the characters versus you're watching like, well, M count is midichlorians, the little cells in your blood that make the Jedi connect to the Force, you know, and you're just like waiting for these characters to figure it out. So there's a little bit of that. But yeah, I think particularly with this two-parter that's coming up, and there's already been some, what is it? What am I thinking? Not review copies, but what's the TV? Screeners. There we go. I was trying to think of what's the on-screen version of that. There have been some screeners out to folks for the rest of the season, for episodes of the rest of the season, and those have gotten well reviewed or being well teased. So yeah, I'm excited. This kind of happened in season two a little bit, if you remember, Brandon, like after we had that two-parter on Coruscant, like we got out of that and then we had that little plot line about like the kids who work in the mine, and I was like, oh, okay, where are we going?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that right now in season three, but then it was after that that we got like Metamorphosis, and then, you know, we just, you know, went into escape velocity. So I'm optimistic that like the show started strong. Maybe there's like a little bit of a mushy middle, but we'll kind of get back into gear very soon.
Yeah, I love Ventress. So, and this episode had Ventress and caves and water and just everything that I like in the world. So, you know, I was fed. But
is the return of the character satisfactory? Did they make any attempts to be like, here's what happened since last time? Or was it just kind of like, hey, here's a, you know, something you may seem familiar to you?
There was subtext. It wasn't blatantly like, this is how I'm back from the dead kind of thing. But there was definitely, we'll say allusions to it. But it really, for the story they were trying to tell, it wasn't necessary. And it wouldn't have fit in. Like, it would have felt like we're taking a minute to break the fourth wall. And we were talking about this in our chat about the episode, our little text chain. And it really would have felt out of place. But we do, like, still have the opportunity to tell that story in other places. Which I feel like is going to happen eventually. Like, I don't think you bring back this character just casually for this one episode. Even though she was probably the best character to do that with, like to take Omega on this journey that she does in the episode. So a little bit of yes, a little bit of no. Also don't know if she's coming back later in the season or not. Like this, we don't know if this is the last time we've seen her. So we could get more of that later on, so we'll have to wait and see. I enjoyed it. I'm kind of freaking out that we have so many questions and so many plot lines, and we have 6 episodes left in the series. I'm a little bit stressed about that, but
yeah,
it's a common feeling in these shows, though. I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I
we'll talk about that later.
I think.
Yes, we will. Actually,
in. Even in season 7 of Clone Wars, you know, I was like, we were watching it so long. It's like, it's taking us so long even though I knew Siege of Mandalore was only 4 episodes, it's like, we don't have that much time left until like the end of the show. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. Even though I was liking everything that we were doing. So yeah, there's definitely some of that. But you guys kind of led into, you know, we're talking about the next Star Wars show that's coming out, The Acolyte. Bad Batch will wrap up May the 4th, and then a month later we get this premiere of this show that we've been talking about for, I think, 5 years now or something. Golly. Like that since it's been announced. So a miracle's happened and a Star Wars project is been announced and never put on the back burner and is actually coming out.
It came out of the Disney investor call. Like,
on May 4th, 2020.
What else has come out of that? Like, what is this actually come out?
It's like
out
the Sarlacc pit. Only the strongest get out, you know? Everyone else is the stormtrooper just down there for 1,000 years.
But literally, what else has been announced from that actually happened?
Andor came out.
Okay.
You'll kindly remember.
I did not remember Visions. That was on the meeting.
Yeah, Visions. Yep. Nah. Let me check on my... Droids, a Star Wars story? Nope, that didn't make it.
Nope, Bad Batch wasn't.
Lando Crump? Nope, Lando wasn't really.
No, Bad Batch wasn't. Okay.
No, I think the only thing was like the next Mando.
Obi-Wan?
No, the Rangers of the New Republic was announced, and that got swallowed up because, you know, reasons. And was it? Oh, I don't think it was Obi-Wan.
Lando.
Lando was announced. This is fun without looking, by the way.
Droids.
Oh, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. The fourth Indiana Jones, or the fifth Indiana Jones movie was announced, I think.
Well, that was a guarantee because you had to make Harrison Ford happy. So.
Okay, sure.
No,
but
that
was announced and it came out.
That was part of the deal for him to do the sequels was, I want to make a fifth Indiana Jones movie.
Really?
Yeah, that was part of the deal. He's why that movie got made. Yeah, like,
I just presumed he would only do it if they killed his character, like he tried to get him to do in Return of the Jedi.
No, I think that, like, that was, from my understanding, that was more of a Lawrence Kasdan thing in this case. Like, obviously, you know, I'm sure Harrison Ford was cool with it, but I don't know if he went in saying we have to do that. I think that was more of a Lawrence Kasdan making that decision as a writer rather than the actor making it.
I don't know.
But the Indiana Jones thing is definitely...
And I think Willow... Was it Willow announced at that one, too?
That could be.
Yes.
Not that I watched the show. And not that,
not that you can.
Not that anybody watched the show, apparently, because it's not getting picked up again. So,
Oops. Sorry about that, guys.
It's all on you, Drew. It's your fault that Willow got canceled.
Yeah, I don't think that's true at all.
Send your hate mail to thedrewbrett at hotmail.com.
You can find me on ICQ servers still.
Oh, so since the Acolyte is here, we're actually going to talk about it. And, you know, we have the little minute 46 second trailer. We don't have a lot of stuff from this yet. We're probably going to do 40 to 45 minutes on it. So buckle up, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. But we're going to look at kind of what are things that could really tank this show and leave it in the even further below, you know, people hate on Book of Boba Fett, even though I like that show. People consider that the worst Star Wars show. What could make it worse than what some people think Book of Boba Fett is? Versus, wow. I said what some people think. I didn't
know. I get it. I'm just like, is that the worst show?
I get that's the no. That's the low bar that people set. I don't agree with
people
it.
Need to. It's a fun show. What the heck is wrong with people these days?
Some people don't like fun, Drew.
There are rancors terrorizing Tatooine. Like, what more do you? All right, fine. We've had this conversation before. I feel like.
And then we're also going to look at what could really make this show the best of the Star Wars show. So to do that, we're going to use our best in butts format, which is going to be where we look at the butts being the bad things and the best being the good things. So a lot of speculation here, a lot of taking a minute and 46 seconds and way overthinking it, but that's what you come to the Clashing Sabers podcast for. So,
true story.
With that in mind, before we get into that, do you guys have any like honorable mentions, either best or butts, that you wanted to talk about that didn't quite make your list, but you wanted to mention?
There are definitely some things that I would like to see that I think would make sure that it's a good, that it's worth the time, right? One of the things I was digging into was heavily defined themes in the similar way how Andor was very clear about what the show is about and the way it was structured, telling basically three different stories, but they all kind of tell the same theme. That's something that I think would be good. And I'll give you something that was that would make it rough would be, oh gosh, let me look at these real quick because I know we want to talk about that. And we want to talk about that, but I also Devore's going to bring that one up, so I'm going to save it. So here we are. Forgetting what makes the High Republic Jedi different from the prequel Jedi. If we forget that aspect, the things that make the High Republic Jedi so different from our prequel friends, then I can imagine the show not landing as well as we would want it to. And I'm sure this will come up later.
I think that's fair. I mean, if you're...
Yeah.
With this being at the tail end of the High Republic, like, you could have just decided to end the High Republic a little earlier and not have had any connection with this being a part of the High Republic, save for, you know, it having Jedi. And so...
Right.
They've been intentional about saying that this is the, you know, tail end of the High Republic. It's not... This story is not the end of the High Republic story, but it is the end of that era. And so you've got to have those connections.
It's kind of a weird transition story. Is from what I can gather the best is that it kind of is what's moving out of the High Republic era into whatever we call the era of the prequels. Because it doesn't seem fair to call it the Old Republic, the New Republic, or anything. It's just kind of like the fall of the Republic, but they obviously wouldn't know that. So it's kind of this weird... And I don't know that it feels like a bookend yet. Maybe the story will do that for us, where it will just kind of some kind of cataclysmic event will just clearly identify the end of the High Republic. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to see.
Devore, did you have anything that almost made your list but not quite?
I think I have one for the butts. This was, putting this list together was hard, and I'll talk in a little bit when we actually get into the list itself, the reasons it was hard to do. But I'll give a butt that kind of ended up on the bubble that was kind of in there, and then I ended up scooting it out for other things. And I think one thing that could be a potential butt for me is character motivations or lack thereof, more the latter. I think this has been the struggle with some latter Star Wars projects where we've had one or a number of characters where motivations, driving forces have either been poorly defined or are borderline non-existent. Mm-hmm. So where I'm watching these things, I'm like, okay, what do you want? Why are you doing this? Where are you going? What's your end game? There's been multiple characters in live action projects lately where I have found myself asking that.
Yes.
And so I would rather not do that in this project.
I want to co-sign that one.
All right, I'll attribute it to you as well. I know you guys are both talking about Ahsoka, and I hate you for it, so...
Not only, but that is one.
Okay.
But it sure does stand out like a shiny beacon in the darkness, doesn't it?
You shut your mouth. So let's go ahead and get into the butts then, since you guys are bringing the vibe down already. We're going to do two and two here, so two butts and two bests. And Devor, I'm going to let you go first this time with your butt number two.
All right. So like I just mentioned, this was a hard list to put together, especially the butts. And I think there were a couple of reasons for that. One is that I think for a lot of stories or like story elements, context is very much king. Like you can take something in the abstract and say like, well, what do you think if the show did this? And I can be like, I wouldn't like that, or that'd be kind of dumb. But then once you fit it into your characters and an arc and themes and stuff, it's like, oh, that, you know, that works. It works in that situation. So like things can be very contextual in that way. And I think to the point that I just brought up, like whys in storytelling are really important. Like a really good defined motivation can make up for even seemingly preposterous plot points. You know, like that goes a long way. So that was one thing that was really hard to do. Like it was hard to get specific in that way in terms of being like, well, if they do X, then I won't like the acolyte. I was like, but I might, depending on the kind of story they're telling. So there was that hard element in terms of like saying like, well, like this, like getting really kind of concrete in that way. The second thing that made it hard is that like the Acolyte just on its face, I think, is very much like plays by its own rules in terms of these recent Star Wars projects, in the sense that like it's not a show that is A, based on characters that we already know. So see Obi-Wan, Kenobi, Book of Boba Fett, and so on. And it's also not even set in a time period that we've seen in live action. So it's even different in that way from The Mandalorian, which, you know, was based on all original characters, but was in this kind of post-Return of the Jedi, Skywalker, saga chronology. So it's outside of that chronology, and it's got all these characters that we've never seen before. And so it's hard to think about, you know, in some ways, it's hard to kind of apply some of the lessons of the live action that has come before to this, because you're like, okay, well, what didn't work in one context might work here, or what worked over here might not work there. So that kind of made it hard to come up with this list. But ultimately, at least for us, what I decided to do was think about, like, look at you know, the selection of live action shows that we have, and try to think about, okay, what are some of the things that like have kind of rubbed me the wrong way, or like haven't landed with me? And I've had to really kind of think at this 30,000 foot level, because again, I can't really be specific, like X plot point wouldn't work for me. And so with that, my number two butt, the thing that could potentially mess up the Acolyte, is not having a storyline that really fits in with the amount of time that they're giving to it.
Okay.
So
interesting.
I think one, This actually gets to something that we touched on a little bit earlier, kind of in our cold open, which is that I think for a couple recent projects, like particularly I'm thinking like Mando season 3 or even an Ahsoka, there have been moments where I felt like it's trying to tell a lot of story and there's not a lot of runway to do it. So you're either kind of short shrifting certain characters or developments, or you're ending up pushing things to potentially future seasons, which is not a bad thing in and of itself, but still. So, and the reverse with something like Obi-Wan Kenobi, like that almost, I feel like in terms of like, you know, runway versus like the amount of time you need to tell a story, it was like pretty close, if not like there was maybe like a little too much runway and you kind of stretched the story a little too much because it was kind of like a movie plus. And so you could kind of feel that a little bit in the show versus these others are the example of the reverse situation where I feel like they're trying to tell all these, like, here's all these characters and these points of view and let's bounce between these settings. And it's like, oh man, like you've got 8 episodes to do this. And like, we're not letting things marinate here. I think like, again, I think like a show like Andor, like having that dozen episodes was just really, really essential to making that first season work. Because if you think about, like, imagine that season, but you're doing it in Mando length, and you have to hack off 4 episodes. Like, if you tried to tell that same story, man, it would be hard. You would be short shrifting a lot. And so, yeah, I think that's one potential thing where I could, where if I say, like, if the Acolyte doesn't vibe with me, a reason that it could is that, like, and in particular, I think this scenario is I'm worried about more than like the Obi-Wan Kenobi scenario is like, if it tries to do too much in the time that it has allotted, I really want a story that's tightly fit within the parameters in which they've given themselves, which in this case is 8 episodes, 6?
Yeah, I think 8 episodes. 8,
yeah.
8 episodes, yes. I want an 8-episode story told in 8 episodes. There you go. That's the summation.
Well, I like that. That's really good.
I think you can look at season 1 and even season 2 of Mando, like, individually as a good example of those things, you know,
yeah.
Those times when it really works. So it's kind of interesting that they kind of got it right, and then as far as, like, the 6 and 8 episode shows, kind of lost it a little bit, and then hopefully now they'll figure it out and get it back, because I mean, the point about Andor is really good. And I've said for a while that I feel like some of these things should have been 12 episodes long. Like, I know you guys had problems with Ahsoka, but I feel like if in Ahsoka you had 12 episodes where you could have done more to make things clearer and maybe even have flashbacks or things like that to fill in the story, could have made that show even stronger. So that kind of leads into my number 2, which is the use of time in terms of time jumps. And if they mismanage what I think is going to happen in the story, which is we're going to have, like Andor, have these different timelines that we are working in. And we kind of get an idea of that through the character Saul, and he is the lead male character that we got in the trailer, and we see him with some different hairstyles in there, which kind of alludes to we're going to get him at different points. The extent to which we're going to get time jumps and everything is definitely going to be up in the air, but I think we're going to see different points in these characters' stories, and that opens up a lot of potential to shore up a problem that Ahsoka did have, which was you didn't fill in enough of the history for us to really get invested in what was going on in some of the relationships between the characters. And if you don't do that, then it takes investment away from the show. And so having either no time jumps or mismanagement of time jumps can be really, really detrimental. And if High Republic has taught us anything, it's that we're going to have a lot of characters. We already saw a lot of characters in the trailer. Probably going to be hard to hit the backgrounds of all of them. So these flashbacks that we get, or these time jumps that we get, need to really be used effectively, considering what you were just talking about, Devor. We're not going to have a ton of time. So they have to really make clear what the purpose of them is going to be, and it needs to fill in the story while also advancing the story. I look to, and this is kind of the biggest example that makes me wary of having stories that do this, I look to Last Shot. I don't know if you guys read that, but its time jumps were all over the place. And it was just hard to keep up with what was going on in the story. It was hard to keep up with what was happening in which timeline versus another timeline, and what characters knew what and what characters didn't. And it just really was detrimental for the book. And it's that aspect alone made it one of my least favorite Star Wars books.
That's my main gripe with Tempest Runner. That's why it's at the bottom of my High Republic. Yeah, for that same reason.
That's a really, really good point. Oh, so it's a very powerful tool if used correctly, but if it is mismanaged, it could absolutely ruin the entirety of the show. And so they've got to handle that very carefully. Now, Leslie Headland did Russian Doll, which is, you know, jumps around, and did a really good job with that. So I think, you know, that's something that she has a history in, and so she's shown that she can do that successfully. So I'm not going to say I'm worried about it so much going in, but I do think that it is one of the most obvious things that could cause it to fall flat on its face. So, Drew, with that in mind, what's your butt number two?
It might be related to this concept, but one of the things that I think would make the show harder to enjoy would be if you can clearly see it being used as a jumping off point for other shows or stories to be told.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. This is the Mando season three of it all. And it's going to go, it kind of dovetails into the other half of our conversation about what we really want to see in it is the strength of the story. But please, I think it's fine to have additional material developed in order to support characters and tell new stories based on what we've seen and what we've enjoyed. That's fine. Let your audience decide who those should be. I don't think that it makes good sense to have stories already put in place for after The Acolyte comes out based on characters we haven't met until the show airs. Now, I'm not saying that they have that, but I'm saying history would teach us that they probably do. There's probably something that happens in this show that's going to spawn, or at least is intended to spawn off into some other thing. This is, we've talked about the MCU of it all before, and how everything in the last several years of the MCU is, this is only an important story to tell because of what comes next. And the problem is that next story suffers from the same problem of it's not important except for what it tells next, and then what it tells next, and then what it tells next. And suddenly what you realize, you look back after all this time and none of the stories have been important. So I'm really hoping we can stick to this. You know, it's being billed as a mystery about somebody who has been murdering Jedi. For the love of everything, stick to that story. tell the story about these characters who are involved. You know, tell us where they come from, why they are involved in this particular thing. Sure, have it like fleshed out and involved in all that stuff, but let's not make this, what the Ahsoka show suffered from, among other things, I think, is that it felt so much just like a bridge from the Mandalorian shows into an eventual film where all these things are going to come together. And all it did was serve as a vehicle to make other things connect in the future, but at the same time, not really doing anything with the time that it had. Now, I know I'm not I'm in the minority on that, and that's fine. But I think we have seen enough of these Star Wars shows specifically, and then even broader, just whatever TV or movies or books that you enjoy, you start to see the code of the Matrix through it, and you can say, oh, this really is only here to serve XYZ purpose. And that kind of stuff is not good. It's very bothersome to me when you can start to see the outline of it all. And so hopefully that will be something they're steering away from here.
Yeah, if I could have a second bubble pick on my butts, it would be exactly what Drew just said. That's definitely – I mean, I am totally fine if they, envision maybe having additional seasons. There was some comments from Leslie Headland, I don't remember what outlet it was. It was like right around the time that the trailer came out, where she maybe possibly gestured to a second season, or at least like that's something that they have in mind, or like maybe they're thinking of stories for it. And like that's like that kind of just sort of sequential storytelling, again, is very common to Star Wars, and it's not, like there's no problem with it per se. But yeah, but to Drew's point, like beginning, middle, end, give me a completed arc in this eight episodes here.
Yeah, and I like how you use like you have a specific constraint of entries, right? You have these eight episodes, and it's kind of, even if you look back at the films that these all have come from, you know, it's episodic in nature by design. Like, that's the whole idea of it coming out. It was supposed to emulate the serialized stories of, like, the 20s and 30s. And that's great. But that's just, you know, I don't really know that's how we want these stories told anymore. You know, when we know that a trilogy of films is coming, we expect that kind of same beginning, middle, and end. But we must also kind of, not necessarily require, but, you know, a film is going to be judged on whether it stands on its own as well. And if all the middle chapter does is set up the third chapter, then the middle chapter is not that great. That's why we can look at things like Empire Strikes Back is great because A, it stands on its own, but B, it makes its connection to the end of the story as well. Last Jedi is great because, one, it stands on its own incredibly well, and B, you know, there's questionable about how well it connects to the end of the movie, but that end of the series, but that's not that film's particular
fault. It set up things for the end of the series.
It sure did, that things that would have been great and very interesting, and then they were just like, ooh, shiny thing over here, let's get distracted by squirrels again. Anyway, so that's kind of like... My major gripe with some of the shows lately have been we're falling victim of the MCU approach to storytelling. Please stop. Don't do this anymore.
That's fair. I think if any show is going to break from that, this is going to be the one that does it.
It feels like it. So. It really does feel like this is the one where things can go off the rails and it's going to be okay. Like... Andor was what it felt like it was going to be. You know, that Tony Gilroy, you know, a sense of maturity to it all. Like, we're here to talk about, we're putting the war back in Star Wars a little bit here. And that makes sense for that show and for those, the driving creative forces behind it. This one feels like it could be the wild card of it all. And that's okay. That'd be great. And I just worry about how much of that could be stifled by a desire to use it as that springboard into other projects, other stories. Please, for the love of everything, don't make this tie into what happens after Return of the Jedi. Please don't leave a hint about the Darksaber or Project Necromancer.
Yeah, or somehow Palpatine returned.
Seriously, if there's like a baby Sheev Palpatine or like whatever Sheev's dad's name is in this show, I'm turning it off.
That's who caught the lightsaber. It's Sheev's dad.
Oh, I, the father of Sheev Palpatine. And they're like, who and who?
You're like, well, it's going to happen like 40 years from now, but he's going to be my kid. He's going to be great. You're going to love him.
You guys aren't ready for it, but your kids are going to love it.
Oh man. All right, Devor, what is the thing that could most harm the Acolyte?
Okay, this one is so abstract and subjective, so I'm apologize in advance. Because it's like it's so up to the individual viewer that like it gives you nothing concrete to like hang your hat on here. But
perfect. Love it.
So if we look particularly at like Star Wars TV, I think that's the point of comparison because once you go, you know, to movies and such, it's a little bit harder. But if you look at like Star Wars TV shows, and particularly seasons of Star Wars TV shows, but also ones that are, you know, complete. When I think about the ones that I love the most, the shows I love the most, the seasons I love the most, whatever unit you want to pick, the ones that are strongest to me are the ones that feel like the whole is more than the sum of its parts. Where, like, the individual episodes maybe are all great, or maybe there's a little bit of consistency where, like, some are just kind of basically good, there's a little, maybe fall a little flat, and then other ones, like, are really great. But then when you look at it as a whole, this kind of maybe ties back a little bit to the conversation we just had. Once you look at it as a whole and the whole package, and you look and you step back and you're like, what was the whole story that it was trying to tell across maybe the whole season, or, you know, the whole set of seasons if you're looking at an entire show, that it adds up to something greater. There's a greater message and story that it was telling that all the parts kind of contribute to in some ways, and they kind of come together and make this bigger thing, right, that exists. And when I think about the shows that haven't landed as much with me personally in Star Wars, it's been the ones where I felt that the sum is the whole is something less than the sum of its parts, where, you know, week in and week out, episode in and episode out, I'm entertained. It's all, you know, basically on some version of good. But then I step back and I'm like, well, what did we do here? You know, across yeah. the whole, like, is there a hole here that each of the parts are speaking to? And I look back and I'm like, no, not really. It was just kind of this week to week thing. But then I step out of it and I'm not left with much to either take away from or to think about or that really hit me emotionally in some bigger way. Again, like I said, very abstract, very subjective. But yes, I think that could be the thing that would most potentially doom The Acolyte. If I'm in a situation where I'm watching each week and I'm like, I enjoyed this episode. This was good. This was great. Like, man, like it's good. And then I get to the end and I'm like, oh, okay, that was 8 episodes of TV. Like, and that's like it. And I'm not I left like with this like, oh, wow, it's doing this bigger thing. It's doing this bigger work. It's speaking to this larger message and moral and so on. So, yeah, again, that was a little like hand wavy, but there you go.
I mean, it's accurate, though. Your number one concern about what would make the show bad is if the show is bad. And there's something beautifully poetic to that. You know, I love it.
Yes. A little tautological, but yes.
Well, but it's...
Like, Andor is the perfect example of what you're talking about, where each week it's a phenomenal emotional episode that on its own is impactful. Then within that, you've got the three arcs of 4 episodes
yes.
each, and mm-hmm. each of those is in and of itself like almost like a season, you know, and is extremely impactful. But then when you stop and you look at the entirety of it together, you're just completely blown away. And that's what we want out of this. Like, we're not probably going to have the arc format like we did with the 12 episodes of Andor, so take that aspect right. out of it out. But yeah, to every single week enjoy the ride. And I think even I'm thinking about Mandalorian and season 2 in particular, I feel like mm-hmm. each episode was great and was an awesome standalone. You can just go back and watch it on its own right now and have a great time. But then when you look at all of it and how they brought all the pieces together, it's like it worked almost perfectly. Like, that is, I think, kind of the bar for what this show has to meet in order to be the best version of itself. So we'll be...
Yeah, and that's... Yeah, that second example is in particular. I mean, the Andor example is good too, but the Mando season 2 is another thing, great example that you bring up there, where you get these kind of individual stories of these little missions, and like, here's the Ahsoka episode, and here he is with Bo, and here's Boba Fett, and you get those and you enjoy them. But then you stick them all together, you know, you go beginning to end, and it's like this great story, like this whole bigger story about like Mando identity and like one's like creed and who's in and who's out, and like it's telling that bigger thing that's coming out of all of those parts, and all those parts are contributing, but not all, like not, each one is not doing it all, like you need them all together to tell that whole bigger wider story.
Yeah
For sure. And we're gonna have a lot of great characters in The Acolyte. They showed us a lot of characters anyways. We hope that they're going to be great. But that leads right into my number one, which is like, this show could go off the rails if the character relationships are not clearly explained or easily inferable, because
interesting.
We're going to be meeting a lot of new characters that are going to have these backgrounds and histories of their own, and not clearly defining those histories and relationships will be distracting and detrimental. Going to the Ahsoka example, like, that is, in my opinion, that show's biggest flaw is you took off from the end of Rebels. There's a whole bunch that happens in between that we never see and is never isn't clearly explained until way too late in the show, in my opinion, and that really hurt the overall story. And so when I think about that in the lens of the High Republic, where one of the flaws that I've said, especially phase one, had is too many characters, that kind of makes me go, you know, like this could be potentially really bad if we're trying to do another High Republic story where you have a whole bunch of characters you're introducing, probably to kill them off because this is the High Republic and that's what they do. But if you get people invested in them and then you don't really explain the relationships, or I should say you try to get people invested in them, but you don't really explain the relationships and connections that they have. And when you're talking about a mystery thriller show on top of that, shows like that leave a lot in the air to build tension, and you're constantly questioning every character, which is a really fine line to walk. And there's a very distinct difference between characters being mysterious and characters being poorly and that is something that, if not handled properly, would basically, you know, completely ruin the show and the potential that it has. Because I think you've got an avenue to tell a story where you have so many different, unique, and dynamic characters. And even, you know, we're seeing Jedi that we haven't seen before, but to actually, like, see types of Jedi that we haven't seen before, approaches to the Force that we haven't seen before. Whether it'll do that or not, I don't know. But you have a story where you have the room to be that creative. So don't leave things in the air that are not absolutely necessary to be left up in the air. You know, like I have this feeling that one of the things we could see out of the show is, like, every week we leave going, oh no, it was this person. And then the next week you find out it's not that person and you're constantly questioning that. That could be a lot of fun. Could be a way to do it the right way. But to just not know enough about the characters to try to create mystery is not effective.
Yeah, okay.
So, Drew, do you have one that is going to really send the Acolyte down the toilet for you?
Yeah, and I can't believe nobody's really mentioned this. If there's any inadvertent spoiling of the end of the Jedi's war against the Nihil, I'm going to turn the show off.
That's a good point.
We have so much more of the story to be told about what happens to Marshan Roe and his crew and what happens to, like, all of our favorite heroes. And I swear, if that first episode opens up with, like, Vernestra Roe coming and be like, well, if you remember when Elzar Mann died, his final words were XYZ, I'm just going to be like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. Quit. And I don't know how they're going to do this, because clearly... No, I don't know if it's that clear. I was going to say clearly the Nihil have been dealt with because they're not around. But I suppose we don't know that to be true. There is still some kind of oddball chance that the ongoing conflict that we've been reading and following for the past couple of years now is not necessarily resolved by the time we get to this show. But man, what a needle that would have to be to thread. I don't know how... Like this has been my concern about the show from the beginning, is the overlap period. I don't know if any of you... Well, there's two examples I can think back to where this occurred. And the first one's pretty easy, where, you know, Rise of Skywalker was coming out, like, next week, and The Mandalorian had to show, like, two episodes back-to-back to catch up on time, because there's a scene where Baby Yoda, at the time, didn't have a real name, uses the Force to heal someone on screen. We'd never really seen that thing before. And it felt very obvious that they had bumped the premiere of that episode up to occur prior to the Rise of Skywalker, so that when Rey gets to the point where she's healing, like, the snake in the pit on the planet of the things, and then where she heals Kylo Ren slash Ben. Sorry, Freudian slip.
New ship name.
I was going to say, yeah. Kylo Ray is the new version of Reylo.
I can't be the first person to have said that before out loud. Like, you can imagine the backlash that would have occurred. It's like, oh, she's using Force powers no one's ever seen before. But then they could clearly point to the episode which came out, like, seriously, 3 days beforehand, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's a weird overlap with that. The other one that I can think of, and I don't know how much of this is going to hit with you guys. How either of you guys big Yu-Gi-Oh fans? Questions you never thought you'd have to ask out loud.
I had the cards. Yeah.
Do you really?
I watched the show. Yeah. I had them. I don't have them anymore. But
okay.
Same, I was.
I told you I was into Digimon DBZ
myself.
We talked about this.
I know you're a Dragon Ball Z fan, but there's that as an anime, and then there's Yu-Gi-Oh, and then it gets weirder and worse as you go on. But there's a moment when the show is airing in the U.S. and they're getting towards the end of the Battle City story, and you've got the three Egyptian god cards, and Brandon has no idea where this is going, and that's kind of fun for me right now. But at a certain point, you're like, I don't know how the story ends, but a movie was released. That clearly showed how the story was going to end. And it didn't get to air on TV, the episodes that would tell the end of the Battle City tournament, for 6 months. So if you go to the theater, you had already seen the conclusion that wasn't going to be on TV for 6 months, and it felt bad. It just felt bad. That's the kind of thing I'm hoping we avoid in this show. I don't want there to be any kind of easy explanation or obvious conclusions to draw about the end of the war with the Nihil from watching this show. Maybe an oblique reference here or there, maybe something that makes you go, oh, I wonder if that plays a role in the story in the book. Because the show comes out in June, but The Temptation of the Force also comes out in June. And then there's another one coming out in the fall. So we know that there are major story beats we have not yet hit, and God help us all if they ruin anything that we've just been waiting on for these couple years.
Yeah. I see that as a worry. I don't think they're... I mean, we got Vernestra, but I don't think they're going to do much with the book in these shows. With the books in this show. Okay, I got the wrong singular plural there. One, because I think there's very different audiences for these things. And I think for the shows, they're very cognizant of... especially for live action, of that sort of general audience. I think, there may be... I think a good... I mean, the one that's sticking out is the Ahsoka of it all, which is fair.
Which is probably this episode is going to be.
The Ahsoka of it all. I think a good example, if you look recently to Jedi Survivor, I think that offers a potential model for how they could deal with these things. Because the flashback, the High Republic stuff, the period High Republic stuff that happens in Jedi Survivor with these characters, happens pretty much at the start of Phase 1. You get an allusion to the Great Disaster, but it is never identified as such. You have a reference. There is a great point where Cordova is talking about Outer Rim Raiders, and if you have the captioning on, it goes Outer Rim Raiders parentheses Nile, but no one actually says the word Nile. And so there are allusions to, and you have the shattered moon at Kobo is shattered because of an emergence. So you have these kind of allusions to stuff that happens in Light of the Jedi, but there is at no point in which, if you have not read Light of the Jedi, you do not know what is happening. You are still able to completely follow the story. So I think to the extent they will pull things in from the books, either, as they're going to overtly with a character like Vernestra Rowe, or with allusions to plot elements, I think it will be things that are discreet, such that if you are a reader, you're like, oh, that's about the Path of the Open Hand. And if you are just a casual viewer tuning into this, you're going to be like, oh, okay, a cult. All right, sure, I know what cults are. And that's it,
I would like that to be the case. And I feel like that is the most likely scenario. But just in terms of egregious error causing potential, it's the one I feel like could be handled the most awkwardly. You're not wrong that there are examples of that point to things that have happened outside of the story that they're telling at the moment, and that's fine. But like you said, in Ahsoka, the entire story is built off of things that you're expected to know already. Imagine if the Ahsoka show had come out halfway through Rebel season 4 had been airing. We'd all be up in arms, confused about what's going on. And even things that the show clearly means are important only are important with that extra homework that you're supposed to have done. Think about the ending of Ahsoka, where they're chilling out on top of the statues of the Mortis gods, which again,
some of us didn't even realize what they were at the time. But that clearly means a lot and has a lot of importance in the context of what's going on in the galaxy. And the show wants you to feel that weight. But if you haven't done the homework, you feel nothing.
Yeah, and this, that's fair.
And that's kind of my concern here is kind of the opposite of that, where what could happen in the story isn't terribly important to the story they're telling, but it reveals so much more outside of the story we shouldn't know yet. So it's kind of like one of those 10% chance of happening, 100% it would be awful.
fair, yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about.
I'm more with DeVore on we're not going to get a whole lot of book connections, but I can definitely see exactly what you're talking about how it would kind of make the years of reading the High Republic almost feel like they weren't worth it if we don't get the payoff there.
Yeah, because it would feel, the way it would feel is like the left hand and the right hand just weren't working together.
Yeah.
And that would be very disappointing, especially with how much we know that everyone behind Project Luminous has been so collaborative and so focused on making sure they function as a team. And the work product has really shown how beneficial that can be. Like, you wouldn't have the quality of these stories if you didn't have the collaborative nature of the people working behind the scenes on them. And if that is thrown out the window, which I'm not saying it will be, or I expect it to be, or I hope it will be. In fact, I hope all of those things not. Please, please, please don't do that.
Well, let's get into the things that we want to see them do. Because yes. I think our optimism for this show outweighs our apprehension about it. So DeVore, what?
We're about tied.
Okay.
Listen, I've been burned before. I'm just, you know,
that is valid.
Expect the worst. Be pleasantly surprised. If you expect the best, you're just going to be let down.
Okay. All right. Somebody who's been watching Spider-Man. with that in mind, DeVore, what is your best number two? What do you think could really make this show work well?
So my best number two, and I think something that this show has a lot of potential to do, is to push ever further our understanding of the nature of the Force, of both the light and the dark. You know, there's been this whole conversation about, like, you know, especially with ever since the show was announced, and then particularly with the trailer, about, like, are we getting Sith in the show? And, like, we could get Sith. But also it'd be really cool if we don't get Sith, but we get other kinds of Darksiders. You know, that's something that recent Star Wars media has been doing. Like, Phase 2, for example, when you go to Jedi, you have groups like the Brothers of the Ninth Door, right, who are Darkseid users and are using it in this kind of interesting ways, but are not, you know, formally quote-unquote Sith, the Sith being just one particular faction with one particular, you know, set of rules and traditions. And I think, like, one of the things that, even just stepping outside from the dark side of it all, like, one thing that the High Republic has done so really well is to give us some new perspectives on the Force. I mean, right out of the bat, Light of the Jedi, the notion of different Jedi perceiving the Force differently as a song, as fire, as wind, that came out. I was like, wow, like, I never thought about it. Like, and you start to wonder, like, okay, how does it appear for, like, Yoda or Qui-Gon or, like, Palpatine, you know? And, like, it gets you this thing's like, oh, okay, that's new and different and fresh. And, you know, you jump into Phase 2 and you get the Path of the Open Hand. Like, okay, here's a group that has its own particular perspective on the Force. Like, we disagree with it and we don't think they're right, but, like, here's a point of view that we haven't really seen before. And you kind of pause and think about it, you know? So that's kind of what I'd like to see with the show. And we've already, you know, seen a little bit in the trailer, some allusions to maybe certain, you know, groups or cults or whatever, you know, actions. So I think there's some potential there to, like, give us some new individuals or new organizations or groups that kind of have a point of view about the Force that maybe we haven't seen before, and that, you know, kind of, like, gets you thinking and kind of challenges your preconceptions. I think that the show has a lot of potential for that, and if it can do that in the way that other High Republic media have done, that'll make me really happy.
I can't think of any examples of this, but I feel like we had talked about in the past how recent stories have lumped all dark side users with the moniker Sith. And it had been less of a focus thing, but I can't think of an example of that off the top of my head.
Well, I think one of the things, like, when The Force Awakens was coming out, they were very much like, Kylo Ren and Snoke are not Sith. They're not Sith. They're not Sith. But then everything in the movie kind of makes it seem no different from being a Sith. And then even now, Kylo Ren is basically referred to as a Sith. Like, there's the Galaxy of Adventures Jedi versus Sith thing. And it's like, there's Kylo Ren right there as a Sith. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, and then you have like things like there's a Sith language.
Yeah.
And there's it's kind of like, I don't feel like we've got a very good definition on what it means anymore. So yeah, I'm with you, Devor, on like expanding the horizons of what that actually might look like. Because again, the flip side of that was, for a while there, all light side users were Jedi, whether they were part of the Order or not. And I was like, well, no, but okay, sure. But I feel like we were walking away from that a little bit more, especially in these expanded universe stories that we're telling.
Well, and so when the trailer came out, Zach and I were talking about it on Sith Talk, and he was very much like in the camp of the Sith have to be in the show. Like, why would they not be? And I'm like, there's a lot of reasons why they might not be in the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's very dangerous to set an expectation that they have to be in the show. Like, I think one of the things that hurt Obi-Wan as a show is everybody expected that it had to be the best Star Wars show ever. And it's like, what if it's just a good, solid show? And it was a good, solid show. I really enjoy it. That wasn't good enough for people's expectations. And that's what's dangerous here is we're going to get some kind of dark side entity. The highest probability right now with what we have is that it is a Sith. But there are a lot of ways to tell the story without the Sith actively being a part of it and with a different dark side entity. And that could be really good if you go in with an open mind to it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the poisonous perils of expectations, as we've talked about many times.
Yeah. So for me, the thing that could really make the show really, really good is, and we kind of got some of this in the trailer, which really got me thinking about it, but the way that they use the martial arts style and that being an avenue to tell stories and develop characters.
Okay. So
I really like this in Ahsoka. I think Ahsoka did this really well, and it's something that animation has done well for a long time. I think that these fights should be storytelling devices more than action set pieces. Go to the original trilogy. The lightsaber duels in Empire and Return of the Jedi are much more about the story they're telling than being about the action. Go to the prequels, you have the reverse of that. As awesome as those lightsaber duels are, they're more about cool lightsaber fights than they are about the story that is being told.
That's a good point.
And so I think that these fights should enhance the characters. They should create a sense of how motivated they are when it comes to achieving their goals. And it should enhance the story development. And we're going to get this new to Star Wars style of fighting where it would be really easy to fall back on, oh, that's going to look really cool, but that's not going to be good enough for the show to be what we believe it can be. And so, you know, they've talked about it being Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and stuff like that, which does use martial arts as a storytelling avenue. And so I'm optimistic towards that. If it is not that, if it does end up being, oh, cool, that's a cool action set piece, I don't necessarily think that is something that would ruin the show. It would just mean it's not reaching its full potential. But if it can do that, if it can really use, and I will say, spoilers for The Bad Batch, most recent episode. Well, you're not going to watch it, so I don't feel bad about saying it to you.
That's true. Really true.
But I think the fight between Ventress and the Bad Batch was a perfect example of using a fight to tell a story. And so I'm optimistic that that is something that they've really been thinking about. at Lucasfilm because Ahsoka and Bad Batch have both done it. So I'm optimistic that we're going to get that in this show. And they really leaned into the martial arts in the trailer. So I think that it is something that they intentionally were very considerate of when making the show. So, but again, like if it hits, it could hit really, really well.
I hope it's not the only time we see it eat too. Is like this one fight in the first episode. Like, let's use it. Use it as a tool to tell the stories. Like, don't have it just be the one and done at the very beginning.
And I don't think it will be. I don't think you bring up a movie like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is so well known and well revered, with, you know, in interviews. I think Leslie Headland has said it multiple times, even. Like, it's been used consistently to describe what the show's martial arts is going to be like. And so I don't think you continually bring that up if it's just in the first episode or two episodes. So I'm very hopeful about that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, Drew, so what do you got as your number two?
This is probably not worthy of rising to this high of boy, I really want to see this, but I really hope we get a nice, strong Vernestra Rowe, who's really been through some things, characterization.
That you guys, everything Vernestra Rowe deserves to be this high on the list, but continue.
Okay, fair enough. You guys remember, like, in the Alphabet Squadron books, if you made it all the way through those, how Will Lark went from like cute little doughy-eyed boy dreaming of flying with the lizard birds or whatever, going to the third book, he's like, he's been through the ringer. He's got like a cool beard now. Like, that character transformation was really fun to watch and was really interesting to read through. And so I'm kind of hoping like Vernestra gets the same kind of treatment of like, now she's a grown up, okay? And she's put the childish things behind her. And it doesn't seem like she's going to be in the show very much.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Like,
yeah. No. I'm expecting.
I think she's going to be
in like supporting character at most.
The IMDb listing for the show, and I know we can't count on all these things ahead of time. The actress only has one episode against her name, as opposed to other characters, which have 7 and 8. So we may not get a ton from her, but it would be really cool if they let her have her moment in the sun, because I really don't know why else you would bring a character like that into a live action show if you're not going to give them a really solid reason to be. I just want it to be good for her. I just think the character deserves to have something cool happen like this. If you're going to bring one character back from the High Republic series we know into a show related to it, even though it's still removed like 50, 100 years from our storyline, this is a good one to pick. Wouldn't have been the one I picked, but that's okay. Nobody asked me.
The one you would have picked couldn't be alive because she would be like,
you don't know that. Don't start with me. Like, Darth Maul.
Yeah, she could be in like a Mari Santeca situation. She's floating in some tank somewhere.
Okay. Chilling in a little space pod. They've got clones of her. It's space
wizards. Or Dagon Gera is freaking in the Empire.
Do you know how many clones of Sheev Palpatine there are in the galaxy, like, at any given moment? We don't even know if the Sheev Palpatine from The Phantom Menace is the first Sheev Palpatine. Come on.
Speaking of things that could ruin the show.
I'm telling you, there's going to be somebody in here that ties into the Palpatine family line, and we're all going to collectively go, dang, nabbit. I quit again.
You're just going to hear a collective sigh from the Star Wars fandom.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Just go, oh, jeez.
Somehow, it's always Palpatine.
Somehow, Palpatine showed up early this time. I don't know. How is he both late and early? This makes no sense.
All right, so let's get into the thing we think is really going to make the show special. And Devorm, throw it back to you.
All right, so I think what I'm going to go with for my number one best is I want, in terms of the world building for this show and, you know, the sets and the locations, the places we go to, the characters we meet, I want it to feel distinctive of this particular moment in time.
Ooh, I like this.
Like, one of the things about the prequels, you know, one of its strengths in The Jump is that you go from the period of the original trilogy where everything is very kind of stark. It has this kind of authoritarian aesthetic of like black and white and, you know, very industrial. And then we hopped in The Phantom Menace. It's like, here are these gold ships and we're going to Naboo, and it's this very palatial kind of Greco-Roman Mediterranean vibe, you know, and there's like things are sleek and you've got these robot soldiers, you know. It's like, and you have this feeling of, okay, this is a distinct period in time. You are seeing the galaxy kind of at the peak, you know, at the height before the fall. Like, the imagery and the locations that we went to, you know, you go to Coruscant, it's like the entire planet is one big city, you know, you evoke of that kind of the bustling metropolis. And so in all of that way, and then even going into the Jedi Council and the temple, and you're seeing when there's still like hundreds of Jedi as opposed to just three, you know, so like all of that really did a good job of saying, like, this is a distinct moment from the Star Wars that you know before of the original trilogy. And then kind of as you go, you know, through the prequels in terms of the designs and the story and stuff, you start kind of seeing that transition into like, okay, like how we're pushing into the look of we are moving away from what at that time was a kind of like golden period height, and we are now, you know, on the way down, and we are going to get to what we get in the original trilogy. And so in similar fashion, now that we're doing this jump, what, 100-ish years, even further back from that prequel period, like, I want this moment to also have its distinct feel, you know, because it's situated in this kind of middle point where it's like, it's High Republic, but it's not quite like Light of the Jedi, High Republic. We're not there. Right. We're some ways out. Right. And we're near the prequels, but we're not at the prequels level. We're not in like late Rome, you know, before everything, you know, goes down the toilet. So I wanted to kind of have this feel that is particular to its time, and that like it gives you that imagery where you can look at and you're like, oh, okay, like that's Acolyte time. The same way that you can do with prequels where you see a ship or you see a certain character and like, oh, yeah, that's the prequels. Like, I recognize that. It evokes that. So that's what I would like in terms of whether it's costumes, whether it's, you know, the buildings, the places they go to, whether it is the lore kind of stuff that we get. I want it to really feel of its time as opposed to feeling like, oh, we're like on the border of the prequels or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I want it to be distinctive in that way.
I think it's a really good point. I mean, it has the potential to become kind of its own era, which is really cool. You know, like, yeah, it's in the High Republic. Yeah, it's close to the prequels. But, I mean, how cool would it be if, like, 5 years from now, we're like, yeah, man, this story is taking place during the Acolyte time period, during the Acolyte era.
Oh, wow. That would be interesting.
It would be really, really cool. I think one of the things that could make that happen in this goes to my number one is the way that they execute on having that distinction of the look and everything. But also I think it would be really cool if they connected kind of the realism and rawness that we got with Andor and the mysticism that we got with Ahsoka. And I think kind of what DeVore is talking about of giving it this distinct look could allow for that, because Andor is this gritty, raw, darker Star Wars show that doesn't shy away from the murkiness of morality within its characters, and shows the impact of the same situation from different point of views without like replaying the same scene over and over again, which is a really, really hard and thing to do, but that they do very effectively. And I think that Acolyte should take that approach to it, because it leads to these amazing characters that transcend the idea of Star Wars while also still fitting in Star Wars. And if you have a distinct look, I think that that opens up the audience to be more receptive to that. You know, like Andor, while it is very Star Wars, it's also looks different in a way. It looks darker, it looks grittier than even the used universe that we've gotten. And since we have Jedi, we can combine that with what I think the Ahsoka show did really well, which is to play with the mythic elements in a way that Andor couldn't. And so this could be an avenue where not necessarily we're even dealing with, you know, here's just the light and just the dark, but here's the murkiness of the in-between and the danger beyond just when somebody from the light falls to the dark. And we've gotten these allusions to different dark side entities like the Brothers of the Ninth Door, like the Night Sisters, but we haven't really explored them. And so this is an avenue where we can really do that. So I think if they combine that feeling and that rawness of Andor, but bring in more of the mythic elements and the Force lore of Star Wars that really brings us back to this story and allows us to see it from so many different angles, we're going to have possibly the best Star Wars show of all time, in my opinion. Like, I know that's a lot to say, but I think that it's another thing where they could go a completely different direction, and that could be really, really good as well. Like, nothing on my list is you have to have it or the show doesn't work. You could, like, I didn't expect Andor to be what Andor was, but it blew me away. And so, like, I'm kind of taking that same approach of I'm going to let the story be what it is, but just based on what we have so far, you know, looking at the things that I think have worked really well in the shows, kind of across the board, if we can take those elements and finally put them in together into one story and take the lessons we've learned in how to tell Star Wars stories on TV, because we've been doing it for 6 years now. 5-6 years now, something like that. Let's take it, let's put it all together to create a masterpiece.
We shall see. I guess that kind of goes into my top one, because this is kind of the inverse of DeVore's butt number one, where his butt was, if the show is bad, if the show is bad, then the show is bad. Likewise, what will make this show great is if the show is great. So on my list, I have it, a strong detective story that lays out the mysteries and its solutions. Make it a real murder mystery. Make the story last throughout the entire season and don't spin off into weird tangents. You guys remember that time in Mandalorian where they went to Coruscant for no apparent reason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like the best episode of the season, though.
It was.
Oh, wow. Okay, sure. Opinions are things people have. To me, I'm thinking if this is kind of like Star Wars' chance to do like a real, not a real, a Girl with a Dragon Tattoo kind of storytelling approach. Like, you've got some weird stuff that's happening, and you've got some opportunities for interesting characters to have some of the strangest things we've seen in a long time. And I think that's going to be, you know, if we can lean into that and then stay true to it for the entirety of the season, it's going to sing. Like, let's not get distracted with, you know, XYZ thing that pops up over here. We don't need a detour episode over here. There shouldn't be that dreaded filler episode. And I don't think that Star Wars has a lot of filler episodes to it, because they have a better idea of their time constraints and the desire to tell these kinds of cohesive stories, until you look in the animation world, and then I think that kind of falls apart a bit. So I'm hoping that this won't be a struggle, but I really want it to be a good, like, here's clues. You know, you're watching these guys try and solve the puzzle and fail, and then the story blows up into something more and blows up into something more. But really, at the heart of it, it is just kind of this question of what is going on. If we can have a nice, strong, cohesive story that is gripping and engaging, and we can follow along, and, you know, the story is you know a step ahead of the audience the whole way through, and we don't all figure it out like an hour and a half in, that would be sad. So let's do that. That's kind of what I'm hoping for the most, is that we're following along and we're engaged in the mystery of it all. And then don't let them all just be dead at the end. If it's season six of Lost all over again, we're just going to... It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough, guys.
To me, what I'm hearing you say there is really like making sure the show knows what it is and what it's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to put it. Like, understand what it is you're setting out to do. Like, Mandalorian Season 1 was really good at that kind of the Western approach.
Yeah.
You know, Season 2 felt a lot more Ronin, feudal Japan, you know, a man and his, you know, a wolf and his boy kind of approach to things. And I like those things because they were consistent throughout the show. I don't think Obi-Wan knew what it wanted to do, like, ever. And that's why you have the beginning of, like, half the show is a kidnap storyline or something, and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is in it. That was a thing. I don't think people remember often enough that the bass player from the Red Hot Chili Peppers kidnapped Princess Leia when she was a kid. But no, then it
we
morphs.
Remember you tell us all the time.
You were there.
I lived through it, sir.
You sat next to me on the couch and you were like, oh, shut up. That was great. But that's kind of like the difference in those, the way in which they cling to the story and they are true to their identity throughout the entirety really makes a difference. And that's kind of what I think will ultimately... We will judge these kinds of things on how well they do that. And it doesn't mean they have to necessarily be a murder mystery. That is what they are billing it as. But if it ends up being something else, that's fine, so long as we keep it through the entire thing and it doesn't shift tone or any other kind of dynamic that would distract from what the show is actually trying to accomplish.
With The Mandalorian, It didn't come out and say that this is going to be a Western for season one. Like, it started with this is going to be a bounty hunter story. And we didn't really know the direction that it was really going to go. They didn't set a lot of expectations as far as, like, this is the kind of genre that we're going for. This one they have. So I think it would be really foolhardy to shy away from that. When you've built it for so long as this detective story, murder mystery kind of idea. And that's part of the reason why I feel like it's not going to be a ton of High Republic Nile stuff in it, because unless the Nile is the one going around killing Jedi, like, you're not going to have a lot of that. So which I don't really think is going to be something that happens. So, you know, I feel like they have a clear picture of what they're wanting to accomplish, and so I feel like they're going to be able to execute on that.
It sure seems like that from what little information we've gotten from them on the show, because I know it feels like it's been forever, but clearly it's been 4 years since we first got the name. And so we know that there's been a lot of work done on it, and so it does seem like they are confident in what they've put together. And you can't always say that about some of these things. So it seems like it's on the best possible footing to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to kind of see if that lines up with what we actually put out. Because the thing I go back to is the cast from The Eternals was really excited about the movie before it came out. Then the movie came out. So,
but with The Eternals, there was chatter that maybe this movie isn't going the way that people think it's going to go. There was consternation around, like, is this storyline going to actually be effective? Yeah. Like, there was a lot of that. With this...
Sure. Just as an example of things that, like, public-facing sounded like was going to win. But yeah, then when rubber hit the road, it ended up being something different, and then the truth came out. So I don't feel like... It doesn't seem like it's a similar situation. I'm just wary of, we know that there have been these high profile issues in the past. And I'm not saying The Eternals is the only one, but it's just the first one that came to my mind to say, like, you know, they sound like they've got their game together. And I think we have cause to believe in that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we have a lot of, like, if if J.J. Abrams was doing this show, and he was telling us all the same things that Leslie Headland had been saying in her interviews and in promotional materials, I think all of us would take everything that came out of that man's mouth with an 800-pound grain of salt because of the work we've seen in the past, for better or for worse. We just don't have that same... I don't feel like it's the same situation. I feel like we have good cause for confidence here, but that in itself makes me nervous for some reason.
I feel like they've been very consistent in the information that they've given us, and I also feel like the fact that they haven't given us a ton of information is actually a sign of confidence for them. Like, they're not begging us to come watch this show. They know that this show is going to draw people in and of itself.
It seems like it, yeah. And, you know, in the same week that they released the trailer, they have merchandise previews and pre-orders available for things. It looks like it's going to come out within 12 months of the show, which is a different change of pace.
Yeah, what a concept.
I know, it's shocking, isn't it? But it feels like there's real support for the story. And so that's encouraging to hear.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see. We've got just a few months left until it is a reality, and then
it's wild. It's wild.
In a couple months from now, we'll be doing our best in butts for season one of The Acolyte and really looking at what it did well and what it could have improved on. So we'll see if any of these ideas come back around. But until then, we'll be covering The High Republic. We will be talking about those books over on Don't Burn the Sacred Text, which is also on the same feed you are listening to this show here right now. All of our shows are on the same feed, so just subscribe so you can get that. And of course, we're going to continue talking about Star Wars and all its many aspects. We'll have our Bad Batch season 3 series finale best in butts episode, as is our tradition. So lots to be excited about, lots to look forward to in the realm of Star Wars, and we're going to have it all here for you on the Clashing Sabers Network. So follow us over on our socials at Clashing Sabers, and of course, if you enjoy what we do and you enjoy Star Wars, make sure you go over and join our Patreon. Help us put some books into classrooms across the country, because none of the money that you give us goes to us or goes to our equipment or goes to hosting fees or any of that. 100% goes to getting books into the hands of children, which is a really powerful thing that we're able to do because of our patrons, which is really, really fantastic. So, Drew, where can people find you if they want to see more of what you're doing or have conversations with you about The Acolyte or anything else Star Wars?
Sure. Best place to find me is going to be on our Facebook group, Star Wars Clashing Sabers. You can find us over there. Best place, you know, we post all the episodes and everything. Brandon does a great job of keeping it active and whatnot, so you can always come by there and we can reminisce about Flea being in the show. We can reminisce about... You guys remember that time that Jack Black and Lizzo was in The Mandalorian?
I try not to.
Christopher Lloyd.
That's crazy. Like, of the names mentioned.
And he played characters. A separatist boomer.
Yep, he was a big fan of those robot soldiers.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of robot soldiers, Devore, where can people find you?
Yes. So, if you want to follow me, you can follow me on X, at A Large Review Pod. You can also go listen to me over on Space Swifties, a Star Wars and Taylor Swift podcast that I host with my wife, the one and only Meg Dowell.
Awesome. Well, until we get The Acolyte, all we can really do, all that we can really hope for and set expectations for, is that we have Batch 8 in the show.
Hi-ho.
Hi-ho.
All Clashing Sabers productions are the intellectual property of the Clashing Sabers Network and ClashingSabers.net. All licensed sounds and images are the property of their respective copyright holders and are used for informational and educational purposes only. For more information on our nonprofit or to nominate a teacher, go to ClashingSabers.net. For questions or inquiries, please email us at ClashingSabersNetwork@gmail.com.
You're just going to walk away?